Good evening. I'd like to welcome everybody to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David. I am an alcoholic.
Hi, David.
Hey, David.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity
to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer up a small flight of stairs. At this time, I didn't do this. Please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask those present to please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. Remember, the person next to you might actually be listening. Obligatory chuckle at this point. Thank you. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So the format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and to ask questions after the meeting on the step discussed tonight. Could I just borrow that?
Yeah.
And so this evening, we're going to be discussing the second half of step one, and I'm going to read a paragraph and pass it to my home group member, Catherine, and Marvel has agreed to come and share with us tonight. Also, we weren't sure how many people we would get, but anybody can use one of these at any time. Just pick it up, and if you have any trouble hearing, you know, just say so, because this room is acoustically kind of weird. What, am I doing something funny? Usually? So that's, okay. Okay, so step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. From page 5 in the big book, this is from Bill's story, I woke up. This had to be stopped. I saw I could not take so much as one drink. I was through forever. Before then, I had written lots of sweet promises, but my wife happily observed that this time I meant business, and so I did. Shortly afterwards, I came home drunk. There had been no fight. Where had been my high resolve? I simply didn't know. It hadn't even come to mind. Someone had pushed a drink my way, and I had taken it. Was I crazy? I began to wonder, for such an appalling lack of perspective seemed near being just that. Renewing my resolve, I tried again. Some time passed, and confidence began to be replaced by cocksureness. I could laugh at the gin mills. Now I had what it takes. One day, I walked into a cafe to telephone. In no time, I was beating on the bar, asking myself how it happened. As the whiskey rose to my head, I told myself I would manage better next time, but I might as well get good and drunk then. And I did. Catherine?
Well, I identified a lot with the, I saw I could not take so much as one drink, that this had to be stopped. And I remember precisely when that happened for me, because prior to that, I thought I could manage my drinking, that how it said, I told myself I would manage better next time. Every time I got into trouble or had horrible consequences from my drinking, it might slow me down for a little bit, but I was back to just drinking as much as I wanted to, as often as I wanted to, within no time. And the moment that I had the clarity, I was actually sitting in a jail cell, and I didn't know if I was gonna get out. And when I did get out, I went home and I started drinking again. It was like I could not stop, and I was literally shaking. And I didn't have much left, and I didn't have a car, so I couldn't go get more. And something inside of me knew right then and there that I could not stop. Like, I just could not stop drinking. And I wanted to desperately, but I couldn't imagine not drinking.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Marvel Gaddy. That's me. He read about exactly the way it was. I began to attend AA in 1971 and needed it desperately. Needed to quit drinking, but I thought I needed a lot more.
Please use this.
All right.
It's on.
It's ready to go.
Hey, okay. I thought I needed a lot more because I had so many problems. If you had my problems, you'd drink too. And that's exactly the way I felt. On January 11th, 1987, 16 years later, after attending a lot of AA, several detoxes and institutions and dying many times, I said just that. I couldn't take any more. And I had a spiritual experience that morning, a wonderful experience. I'm still trying to put it all together after all these years. But I realized I had heard many things in AA in those years. One was, if Marvel, the only way you're gonna stop drinking and get your life back is if you come into Alcoholics Anonymous and you make it your way of life. And he was right. And another thing that dawned on me after it was the cliches. You know, that I read the book. My first book was a second edition. I read the book and studied it and cried, spilt whiskey on it, and all kinds of things. I mean, you name it. And, but that morning I realized I had no defense against the first drink, none whatsoever. And that Alcoholics Anonymous could give me that defense. Packed up my stuff and drove 1,000 miles. Get back home where AA, where my friends and loved ones and people that were here that cared about me, family and so forth. And that's when my journey began. And January 17th, 1987. Just like that. Thank you. All right, thanks, Marvel. We're going to press on to page 7, also in Bill's story. It relieved me somewhat to learn that in alcoholics, the will is amazingly weakened when it comes to combating liquor, though it often remains strong in other respects. My incredible behavior in the face of a desperate desire to stop was explained. Understanding myself now, I fared forth in high hope. For 3 or 4 months, the goose hung high. I went to town regularly, even made a little money. Surely this was the answer, self-knowledge. But it was not, for the frightful day came when I drank once more. The curve of my declining moral and bodily health fell off like a ski jump. After a time, I returned to the hospital. This was the finish, the curtain, it seemed to me. My weary and despairing wife was informed that it would all end with heart failure during delirium tremens, or I would develop a wet brain, perhaps within a year. She soon would have to give me over to the undertaker or the asylum. Catherine.
I never thought that my will was weak concerning alcohol. I just couldn't understand why I couldn't drink like other people and why I couldn't just drink a little bit. It never, ever, ever occurred to me that I couldn't drink at all, that that was the only answer. So I never, in my 16-year drinking career, ever once tried to stop drinking. I always tried to just get it under control, not drink so much, show up for work the next day. And I remember towards the end asking people, like, how do you drink at night and still get up and go to work the next day? Like, I couldn't figure out how people could do this. And my behavior was just, I couldn't even explain it. I could not explain. At one point, I did go to AA because I had gotten a new job. And I knew the next day I was starting. And it was through Tim Pagency, and I'd already been fired one time for appearing drunk on the job or having alcohol in my breath. And they were giving me a second chance. They were putting me in this new place. It was a bank. And I was to show up the next day, and I had this firm resolve. I was going to do it right. This was going to be a great job. And lo and behold, I drank till 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, and I overslept. And they called, wondering where I was. And I showed up. They said, well, I said, I can be there. I'll be there in 5 minutes, I promise. So we want you to come first to our office. And I argued with them and pleaded with them that I wasn't drunk. And they got down to giving me a breathalyzer as to determine that I really was drunk. And I was lying the whole time that I was not drunk. And then, of course, I failed the breathalyzer and had to ask someone to come and pick me up because they wouldn't let me drive my car home. But that is just, I can't even explain why I lied to myself and to others about my just irrational behavior. And, at that point I thought maybe I had a problem, but I still drank for 8 more years after that and had many more jobs that I got in trouble with for my drinking. And when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I did think I had blackouts. I didn't think that I had the shakes, but towards the end there were several mornings where I couldn't even put mascara on because my hands were shaking so badly, and I just tried to block that out. And my first DUI, I was like 21, and no, 22, and I didn't even know what had happened. I literally crashed into a concrete barricade on 264. And I woke up and I thought I had been in a car accident. I really had no idea what had taken place. But at the time, I didn't think that was a blackout. So I didn't stop once. And that moment that I had just under 4 years ago, it was like for a split second I could see that I was going to die this way. I literally was going to kill someone or I was going to die. And it was the first time that I ever thought maybe I needed to stop. Maybe.
Thanks. Marvin?
Those problems I mentioned, they all begin to go away. A lot of wife, children, those things, they begin to disappear because there were a lot of the problems I was having trying to maintain all that. And then the job disappeared. The job didn't disappear, they fired me. Not because I couldn't do the work, because of being drunk, missing work. And that kind of was it. I had already been suffering since my early 20s from the shakes. But I had never, I'd had a few blackouts. I was plagued with the memory of, I was a maintenance drinker. And, trying to maintain that feeling of well-being with alcohol. And when you drink enough of it, you can have it. But the next morning, there it is again. A whole lot of stuff happened to me during my drinking career that helped me in a lot of ways to actually become convinced that I was an alcoholic. I was admitting I was an alcoholic for many years. I mean, the evidence is there. But I couldn't accept it down inside, where those old timers used to tell me, it's an inside job, Mom. Inside job. And I fought it. I fought it tooth and nail. And, you know, I don't know if anybody in here has ever suffered seizures, delirium tremens, lost days, lost mind. You know, but that's a heck of a place to be. Heck of a place to be. The physical allergy of the disease of alcoholism is really, if I could have continued to drink, I'd have probably continued to drink. If I could have had enough money and physically been able to continue to drink, I'd have probably woke up dead one morning from drinking, for sure. You know, because I had so much fear and so much self-loathing that I developed over the years in alcohol, with alcoholism. You know, and that sense of failure was complete. It was complete. And so the journey these last many years has been a rewarding one in many ways.
Okay, we're going to press on to page 24. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. The almost certain consequences that follow taking even a glass of beer do not crowd into the mind to deter us. If these thoughts do occur, they are hazy and readily supplanted with the old threadbare idea that this time we shall handle ourselves like other people. There is a complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove. Catherine? Yes.
And there it is, the threadbare idea that this time we shall handle ourselves like other people. I had that idea for, I couldn't let it go. And that first time that I realized I wasn't like other people, I didn't drink like other people, and the fear of imagining life without alcohol and knowing that I did not have what it took to stop. I couldn't do it on my own. I didn't have the power. I couldn't do it, and I didn't know how. I didn't know where to look for help, even though I had been court-ordered to AA so many times. It didn't even cross my mind that that's where I needed to go. But that terror of, oh my God, how am I gonna stop? That was a really scary time. So of course I just picked up a drink. And eventually, within a couple days, I went to see an attorney because I was facing a lot of legal problems on my last bender. I almost killed two people behind the wheel of a car. And I left the scene, and I'm describing the events, the circumstances and the events of what happened, and my past infractions. And this attorney, who was not alcoholic, looked at me and just said, "What are you gonna do about your drinking problem?" And it was like something inside of me just crumbled. And it was the first time I said to someone, I don't know. And I was just tears. I mean, I wasn't like sobbing hysterically, but tears were just coming out of my eyes because I literally did not know what to do. And it was so sad and so scary. And he said, you need to get your butt to AA. And that night I went to my first meeting when I actually wanted to get sober. I actually went because I wanted to help. And I think Marvel might have been at that meeting. That was a rough sight. the complete failure. I had just kept putting my hand on that hot stove. Kept on doing it over and over and over. And I didn't think there was any hope left for me.
It used to amaze me every morning about I had such a craving, physical craving for alcohol. All mental sense of the word would not help me overcome or even go without a day without alcohol. First phone call I made to AA was to a guy, Elmo Hawkins. Some of you have been around, you maybe remember him, but he helped get the Easy Dozen Club going. And anyway, I called him. I didn't know it was him at the time. I realized it later on because he had a real deep voice. And he asked me if I could go a day without drinking. I said, sure. Sure I can go a day without drinking. And he told me where a meeting was that night. I could not make it through that day. I could not make it through that day. And I remembered that. Remembered it all along. I remember it now just as well. You know, this book is filled with so much of myself. I'm on every page of it, you know. And every day I would have to try real hard to come up with a new plan. As long as I can, and the plan was always around a bottle of whiskey. Way of getting that bottle of whiskey. And as time went on, I began to run out of plans. I began to run out of plans. And I couldn't, it became much, much harder and harder to get it. You know? Then you begin to do things where this demoralization really kicks in, you know. That you got to go about and go and do to get a drink, just to get a drink, you know, to keep from physically crumbling. So, and it doesn't matter what you know, what you think you know, or anything. It's the hardest job I've ever had to do, being a full-time alcoholic.
All right, thanks. We're going to go on to page 34. It asks an interesting question. For those who are unable to drink moderately, the question is how to stop altogether. We're assuming, of course, that the reader desires to stop. Wherever such a person can quit upon a non-spiritual basis depends upon the extent to which he has already lost the power to choose whether he will drink or not. Many of us felt that we had plenty of character. There was a tremendous urge to cease forever, yet we found it impossible. This is the baffling feature of alcoholism as we know it, the utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or the wish. How then shall we help our readers determine to their own satisfaction whether they are one of us? The experiment of quitting drinking for a period of time will be helpful, but we think we can render an even greater service to alcoholic sufferers and perhaps to the medical fraternity. So we shall discuss some of the mental states that precede a relapse into drinking, for obviously this is the crux of the problem. What sort of thinking dominates an alcoholic who repeats time after time the desperate experiment of the first drink? Friends who have reasoned with him after a spree, which has brought him to the point of divorce or bankruptcy, are mystified when he walks directly into a saloon. Why does he? Of what is he thinking?
Well, I know now from being an Alcoholics Anonymous, what I was thinking about was myself. I really didn't have any thought of anyone else. I mean, I wanted to care. I wanted to be there for people. I wanted to be a good employee. I wanted to be a good daughter. I wanted to be a good sister. I wanted to be a good friend. But the bottom line was that alcohol won out every time. And I really truly could not stand being sober. I couldn't stand not having some kind of substance in my body to cope with life. And I love that, you know, for those who are unable to drink moderately, it took me a long time to get there, a really long time to get there to realize that I couldn't drink moderately. And the question is to stop altogether, or how to stop altogether. And the only solution for me is Alcoholics Anonymous in a spiritual basis. I had completely lost the power of choice. I could no longer stop drinking. And I love that, you know, many of us felt we had plenty of character. I thought I had tons of character. I thought it was a riot and life of the party, even though I was no longer invited to parties. And, I mean, I was so drunk, but then that was like towards the end, I couldn't believe how fast I got drunk sometimes. I mean, literally, it would kill me being on the phone. Of course, you know, the first thing you do, or I did, was pick up the phone. And I would be slurring my words, and I didn't really keep track of how much I drank. And whenever I was asked, how much do you drink, I really couldn't give a straight answer, because I really didn't know. I could tell you how many, you know, handle bottles of Jim Beam I consumed a week, but I couldn't tell you how much I drank in one day or one sitting. And I really, truly couldn't leave it alone. And I had so many people plead with me, please, just don't drink the liquor, drink the beer, or whatever. And it just wouldn't work. And the only time, you know, I said I never tried to stop drinking. One time I did stop for 2 weeks, and it was because I was being detained in our Chesapeake County Jail, or city jail. And I thought because during those 2 weeks I didn't have what I considered to be withdrawals, that I must not have a problem. And I remember a roommate of mine asking me if I thought I could stop. And I'm like, well, I stopped for 2 weeks when I was in the jail, and I was fine. So I must not have a problem. But, and I, you know, I had friends come and pull me out of my benders. You know, I will go on week-long benders and just be in filth and a mess, and they would come over and pull me out and take me to a shrink. And they would talk to me about, you know, I need to come back and see them and get this drinking thing under control, and I didn't want any part of that.
All right, I'll hold it up closer, Dave. in my early, late teens, early 20s and all, I had a lot of running buddies and friends and family, you know, they had wives and we all hung out together and all that. And they would, different ones would say every once in a while, Marvel, if you didn't drink so much, you'd be able to be all right. You'd be fine. You'd be a fine person. And later on, those same people would say, Marvel, we don't know if you'll be a fine person even if you quit drinking. I mean, the attitude, you know, it just can get just really gross about life on life's terms. But this business about being able to quit on a non-spiritual basis, I knew a long time ago when I was just a little fella that, you know, I was raised in a church and I had a great love for God. Alcohol began to take number one priority in my life at a very early age. My prayer many, 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 many mornings was, God, if you would just take this craving of alcohol from me and help me to feel comfortable inside, I'll do anything. And God waited till I was really ready for that to happen. And then he did something, you know, he really truly did. So my whole recovery and everything starts with God every night, ends with God every night. And that's always my final answer to anybody that's in recovery or that wants to get into recovery. It is my final answer because without it, who are you going to turn your life and will over to? Graham? Dave?
That's a good choice.
Catherine? I mean, truly, that's all I got.
All right, so we're talking about the obsession of the mind and picking up that first drink. And one of the things, we skip the story, but people familiar with the Big Book, he gives several examples of the fellow putting the whiskey in the milk and long periods of dry, qualified him to drink like a gentleman, etc. So without telling those stories, one of the poignant paragraphs is on page 37. Whatever the precise definition of the word may be, we call this plain insanity. How can such a lack of proportion of the ability to think straight be called anything else? You might think this is an extreme case, but to us it's not far-fetched, for this kind of thinking has been characteristic of every single one of us. We may have sometimes reflected more than Jim did upon the consequences, but there was always the curious mental phenomenon that, parallel with our sound reasoning, there invariably ran some insanely trivial excuse for taking the first drink. Our sound reasoning failed to hold us in check. The insane idea won out. Next day, we would ask ourselves, in all earnestness and sincerity, how it could have happened.
When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't like to accept the idea that I was insane. But the facts, I mean, just the facts on the table, it was clearly obvious that I was mentally insane. And I really thought that all of the troubles that I was going on, when it talks about next day we would ask ourselves in all earnestness and sincerity how it could have happened, I really thought all those troubles were because of the drinking. But the fact was, it was my thinking. It was how I thought about life and about not dealing with it, just trying to escape from it. And I clearly remember in early sobriety, I mean, literally like in the first 30 days, one day sitting in my living room and just going crazy in my head and just going, God, please take this away from me. Do anything. I will do anything not to feel this way. And, you know, those moments sometimes crop up in daily life when I'm faced with a situation that I don't like, that I don't know how to deal with. And fortunately, Alcoholics Anonymous has provided the tools, sponsors, other alcoholics. But the fact was is that I really had no ability to think straight. My rationale for making decisions was so off the radar into complete insanity. And that That was a little bit harder for me to accept. I don't know why it was easier for me to accept that I was an alcoholic. And that my life was unmanageable. But I didn't realize it was my thinking. It really wasn't the drink that I was picking up and putting in my body. Thanks.
I started a new career when I was 24 years old. I've been in retail business for a lot of years and worked my way up pretty good when I had a lot better control of my drinking. And I started this new career, and I worked for them about a year, and the drinking started getting real bad again. I started missing time, you know. And I remember I had a great boss and a whole bunch of good fellow workers and employers and all that, employees and all around. And we all, but it was a drinking crowd also. But and a lot of these guys have gone on to be very successful in the business. It's a heating and air conditioning business. And anyway, I come back in one morning and Bruce, the manager of the distribution house, called me in there. And here again, I'm sitting down there, and here again he says, Marvel, he says, he didn't really ask me where I've been. And I've been out 2 or 3 days drunk. And he didn't ask me, you know, anything. He said, you know what, Marvel, he said, you're one heck of a worker around here. And I got a lot of hopes for you. You know, because alcoholics work hard. We work hard. We have to. And he went on to discuss my job and, you know, my work and all this kind of stuff. And then he said, he looked at me, he said, but there's something that just amazes me. He said, you got the best excuses of anybody I have ever heard or dealt with in my whole life. I never forgot that. Best excuses. I got no excuses anymore. You know, but, and I was, the judge sentenced me to the insane asylum back there in 81. And when I left out of there, I was going to stay sober and I was going to get back into AA. And there was a man bringing a meeting in twice or three times a week there, and I was at the front, on the front row every time he brought that meeting. And when they released me, they gave me some papers. And I had been accused or diagnosed of being an acute alcoholic. And when I left there, I was diagnosed as a chronic alcoholic, not cured. And, you know, it was 38 days in the insane asylum. And I had every intention of staying sober. And that was on July the 1st that they released me. And on July the 3rd, I was in Danville, Virginia, drunk, with 2 half-gallons in a $12 a week room with my uncle. You know, no defense whatsoever.
So on, we continue on page 41. As soon as I regained my ability to think, I carefully went over that evening in Washington. Not only had I been off guard, I had made no fight whatever against the first drink. This time, I had not thought of the consequences at all. I had commenced to drink as carelessly as though the cocktails were ginger ale. I now remembered what my alcoholic friend had told me, how they prophesized that if I had an alcoholic mind, the time and place would come, I would drink again. They said that though I did raise a defense, it would one day give way before some trivial reason for having a drink. Well, just that did happen and more.
for what I had learned of alcoholism did not occur to me at all. I knew from that moment that I had an alcoholic mind. I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help in those strange mental blank spots. I had never been able to understand people who said their problem had them hopelessly defeated. I knew then it was a crushing blow.
Wow, that's a powerful, powerful statement to say that one is hopelessly defeated. And you know, I do know that something inside of me, literally inside of me, something I can't explain, did change. But that fact of having an alcoholic mind and the trivial excuses, and with my first sponsor that I had to make a list of all the ways that my life was unmanageable, and I went through all the circumstances that, not all of them, but a lot of circumstances that had caused unmanageability in my life. And they were all obviously circumstances of legal trouble or lost jobs or broken family relationships. You know, significant things that caused a lot of hurt and frustration. And the fact is that in the beginning, I do remember that idea of going, well, no one, I can drink without telling anyone, even though I was going to AA at the time and I really truly wanted to stop. Those horrible times when I just could not stand the way I was feeling and I wanted anything to make it go away. The thoughts would come in that I would not tell anyone, I would go to the store, get my liquor, and then I would just lock the door and I would hide the keys somewhere where I couldn't find them, because I had a serious issue with getting crazily drunk and then having to go somewhere. No matter how many times I said I would not drive, for some reason I always ended up in the car. I had to go somewhere. It was urgent. And basically, I don't know how it happened, but some other thought came into my mind. And I remember two different occasions in my first 30 days. One occasion when this thought pattern was just not, it was so persistent, it was not relenting. I started cleaning with a paper towel the blinds in my kitchen just to do something. I mean, it was ridiculous. I'm sitting there with this paper towel and this thought, my mind is going crazy, crazy. You can do it. You can get away with it. Just hide the keys. Don't drive. And something in there, a thought that was not my own, said, you do not know what you are going to do once you start drinking. You have no ability to say that you're not going to drive or that you're not going to do this. And once you get that liquor home, and what happens when you run out? You're going to be going to the bar. And another time when that happened, I started weeding a flower bed. I mean, I didn't weed. I mean, these are like these tasks that just were just something, anything to do. But the bottom line is that something inside of me changed. And the people that I met, the other ladies in Alcoholics Anonymous that I met, that have stories similar to mine, that had gone really low, they had productive and successful lives. And I admired them, and I wanted to be like them. And I didn't know how they got there, but I knew that I was willing to like stick with them. And whatever they said to do, I would do. And basically, if I had had to, at the time I resigned myself that I would do anything, I would live a horrible life of no fun, of wanting to drink every day, but I wouldn't drink. But the bottom line is that something inside of me changed and I stopped wanting to drink. It wasn't like that for very long for me. It only lasted for several weeks. That craziness that just wouldn't let up, that I just had to do something to make it go away. And randomly, thoughts will come in my mind for out of no reason. Nothing crazy is going on. I don't know what it is, but I'll go out of town and a random thought will be, you're out of town. No one knows you're here. You can drink. You're going to get away with it. It's a split second thought, but it's gone in a flash, and that's not my normal mode of thinking. Normally I will grab onto that idea and let it linger, but something has changed.
After you get sober, unmanageability can lead you back to a drink. That's why there's two parts to the first step. I was unemployable to any of the companies around here when I got sober in January of 87. And I didn't do nothing but go to meetings for 6 months, 2, 3, 4 meetings a day. You could get 3 meetings a day in those days during the day, and you could get 4 good ones a day on the weekends. And you can do 267 days in 90 days. I know that for a fact. Also knew April or so, I knew I had to go back to work, and I had a lot of fear with being able to do that, because I just knew nobody was going to hire me. And I developed some pretty good friendships in AA during those years and during those months. And I had $37 in my pocket, and I went down and $16 worth of cards made up. And I began to pass them around in AA to different people that, you know, we talked, you know, we got to know each other, and they found out what I did. And everybody had a need for it. And by the end of that year, I'd made $67,000. That's more money I've made in my life. Now, it wasn't all my money, because I'm having to buy equipment, tools, all kinds of stuff. So, you know, I probably got about 20 of it, but that was... But I opened a business. And it became a very lucrative business, good business, a good make-a-living business for me. And that's all I wanted to do. My reputation began to precede me, and things got good. And first woman that hugged me in AA, I cried. Nobody had hugged me in years, you know, during those early days in AA. And, you know, I was in a relationship, and things were... really looking up, and but I'm attending AA religiously, and I'm working hard. And I asked a guy one time. I said, I asked George Duncan. I said, George, what would make an alcoholic like me drink again? And he said the same thing that'll make an alcoholic like me drink again, Marvel. I said, what is that, George? He said, first is that you haven't taken the first step of this program to the deepest, most parts of your inner mind, body, and soul. And the second one is, you won't accept what AA has to offer. And I went away from there fully knowing that. And business, Marvel Getty is what happened. 6-7 years in business, everything's great. You know, I've got a little condo. I'm very active in AA. I'm all around. And I've suffered from depression. 40 years sober in 1989, at the Grand Affairs give her talk. And she talked about her depression. And at the end of it, she said the thing she discovered about depression was that it was the most extreme form of self-centeredness that a person can have. What's the book say? You know, this thinking has to really be directed in my life. Because my life is definitely unmanageable. 10 years, 3 months, I'm supposed to turn left to go to my home group, Ocean Front Men's Group. I turned right and went and bought 2 quarts. And not because I wanted to drink again or wanted to have fun or I was missing out or anything. I bought those 2 quarts because I didn't want to exist anymore because of the unmanageability that I had tried sober and failed at again. Don't take it lightly. Thanks.
So on the bottom of page 43, to close the chapter on more about alcoholism.
My favorite paragraph.
Bill writes, and of course he's given us a half a dozen examples of this throughout the chapter, but he decides to say once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink, except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power.
Well, I definitely believe this to be true, and I don't know if it's appropriate to say, but you know, there is a part of me that is afraid of going back out there. It's not something that sits with me constantly, but that fear, gosh, that was a horrible life I was living, and God really, truly picked me up out of that pile of heap of mess. Just picked me right up, dust me off, put me in AA around sober people. They showed me how to be an adult. I mean, I'm still learning how to live what most people consider a normal life. And I fight it. You know, I don't want it. I really don't want to work. Going to meetings can be a pain in the neck sometimes. But the fact is that's what saved my life. And even in the busiest of days when I really don't want to pray, as I was like, the basic prayer, which I think most people are taught when they first come in, is to get on your knees and thank God for keeping you sober at night. And in the morning, ask Him to keep you sober. And in the beginning, I didn't know if God would actually keep you sober. But I was like, okay, it's a crapshoot, but I'll try it. And I truly, in the bottom of my heart, believe it is God that keeps me sober. But I have to do the things to allow Him into my life. And I guess where I'm trying to go with that is that life does start getting pretty good. And, you know, I became employable again. And things, you know, my legal troubles went away. It took a year and a half, but I ended up not being convicted of a felony. And it's really easy. My pride and my selfishness thinks that I did this all on my own, that I got myself sober, that I carried myself to AA, I made myself go to all those meetings, and that, you know, I can just keep on, you know, I'm sober now, I'm good. But the fact is, you know, what Marvel was describing, and I've heard it so many times over and over again, is that if you get too far away, all that worldly clamors, all the things that I was striving for so badly that I wanted, prestige, money, power, all those things, to be recognized, to be important. All those things can take priority, and I block God out. And I just really, really, really want God in my life today, because that's what saves me. Thank you.
That's exactly what happens. We block God out. You know, I'm a guy that's really become convinced of so much over the years through my mistakes and through my illness and through my recovery. And most of the people that I sponsor are long-term drinkers that can't drink no more. and a lot of things that happened that, you know, they went down the tube, and it took years to do for that to happen. You know, we wasn't drug addicts. I understand you get there quicker with drugs. But I didn't, I was a, alcohol was my thing. And after that relapse, I knew about this paragraph. I mean, I knew about a lot of stuff in the book, and I mean, I've studied the book for years and years. But I went back to that paragraph, and I looked at that seventh step. And with, in the mirror, I was finally able to take the seventh step through the prayer. The good and the bad. You know, I am my worst judge of me. I don't know about you, but I know about me. I am my worst judge of me. And most of it is a lie. And most of it's false. And most of it's crazy.
<It's okay.
laughs> So, you know, I don't do that no more. I don't do that no more. And the emotional bondage, the grave emotional mental disorders, you know, I've been relieved of that through my own mistakes, through my own recovery, through my own thinking, through my own insanity, sober, you know. And I know many people that's reached hard bottoms in sobriety. And a lot of them didn't drink again, you know. But I'm a guy that's very, very weak when it comes to alcohol. Very weak. So I get my strength from this power that's greater than myself. And it's amazing how that happens and how, and if I'm paying attention, which I do, I pay very close attention. I got out of that business in 1997 after that relapse. And I got this boy's life just as simple as I can get it and keep it. It's been that way the last 16 years. Keep it simple, Marvel. Keep it simple, alcoholics. Keep it simple. Thanks.
Thank you, Marvel. I'd like to thank Marvel and Catherine for bringing a message of depth and weight tonight. And the topic that we've been discussing tonight is a little bit heavy, but come back next week because we're going to talk about hope and recovery, and there is a solution to this problem.
There you go.
So don't wait till next week. I'm going to pass the seven tradition basket
In accordance with the seventh tradition, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It's both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any announcements for the good of AA? Wild.
Wild.
Thank you. Anybody else?
My name is Leanne.
Hi, Leanne.
July 31st, it's a Wednesday night at 8 o'clock, St. Mary. I was having a speaker and a birthday. He's coming from Philadelphia. I don't know his name, but it's at 8 o'clock on the 31st at St. Mary.
Cool. Thank you. Any other announcements?
Roundtable, Saturday night roundtable group. This Saturday night is having their 45th anniversary.
Ooh,
ooh. All right. And we're going to have a little eating, and then I'm not sure what's going to happen after that. but we'll probably roast somebody or half a dozen people. It'll be a great meeting. It starts at 6:30, yeah. It's actually going to start eating, I think, around 7. It'll last to 9:30.
Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you, Barbara.
Anybody else? All right, the Simple Actions Group is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Thank you. There is literature available somewhere.
On the other side of coffee.
On the other side of the coffee. Pamphlets are free. There's newcomer packets over there. And we have books for sale. Is there anybody here tonight in the room in their first 30 days of recovery? We'd just like to know your first name so we could welcome you. Anybody in their first 30 days?
Hi, Brian. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Brian.
Welcome. Glad you're here.
Anybody else? All right. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anybody willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. All right. In closing, I'd like to thank everyone who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight.
I'm Sarah, and I'm an alcoholic.
Sarah.
Hey, Sarah.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we only know a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you.
Amen.
Thank you, Sarah.
We'll close with the Lord's Prayer.
That was great. Oh, at least I hope it wasn't too depressing. Thank you.
It always is.
Our Father.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Amen.
Amen.
Thank you.
All right.